What the secretary failed to do with any environmental analysis, any public process related to this actual exchange of land.
Environmentalists sue the Interior Department over the proposed King Cove Road. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Bethel Democrats prepare to replace Representative Zach Fansler.
I think there are a number of people that could do the job and would do it very well.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. You can nominate your favorite teacher at bpteachers.com. The deadline is February 1st.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Conservation groups today filed a lawsuit to thwart the land exchange Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke announced last week. The swap is intended to allow a road for King Cove through the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge.
What the secretary failed to do with any environmental analysis, any public process related to this actual exchange of land.
Attorney Katie Strong at the environmental law firm Trustees for Alaska alleges the swap violates environmental law and several aspects of ANILCA, the 1980 Alaska Lands Act. Strong says ANILCA put specific conditions on building roads and refuges and on land exchanges.
That exchange provision was not included to allow the secretary to just trade away lands where development pressures arise.
Road advocates say the access is a matter of health and safety for the people of King Cove. Bad weather often makes it unsafe to fly out of their airstrip, but a road would take them to Cold Bay and its 10,000-foot runway. About 10 miles of road would go through the refuge. Strong says Zinke needed to get the approval of Congress and subject the proposed land trade to formal public scrutiny. She says an environmental review must also precede any swap. A reporter asked Zinke last week if he had done an environmental analysis on the exchange. The secretary gave a general answer.
We looked at everything.
His predecessor, Sally Jewell, ordered an environmental study on a different proposed swap and two possible routes for a road. She concluded a road would cause irreversible damage. Zinke said there would be a new environmental review for the road itself, but he didn't say one was required for the swap. He said as secretary, he's a steward for public lands and also has a responsibility to tribes.
So on this one, there is no significant issue that the Department of Interior has found environmentally, just the opposite.
Trustees filed the lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Anchorage on behalf of nine groups, including the Wilderness Society, National Audubon Society, and Homer Base Friends of Alaska National Wildlife Refuges. Senate leaders disciplined Wasilla Republican Senator David Wilson today over an incident in which he retaliated against a female legislative aide. Wilson will be on probation for 3 months and was required to write a letter to the aide taking responsibility for his actions. Fairbanks Republican Senate President Pete Kelly says the leaders took other actions.
We required an individual training course on retaliation and placed Senator Wilson under travel restrictions.
Kelly says Wilson must demonstrate during the probation period that he understands human resources policies and the legislature's expectations for decorum. And he won't be able to take any state-funded trips. The legislature's human resources manager, Skip Lobos, found in a report released today that Wilson committed retaliation during a December press conference. Wilson said at the press conference that security footage showed he hadn't sexually harassed the aide during a June incident. Loba found that the incident did not fit the definition of hostile work environment sexual harassment, but Loba said the incident did occur and that it was an uncomfortable interaction between Wilson and the aide. Loba wrote that Wilson undermined the investigation by claiming the incident didn't happen. Eyewitnesses said Wilson held his cell phone between the aide's legs. Loba said the video showed Wilson held the phone 1 to 2 feet from the hemline of the aide's skirt. The Alaska House has booted one of its members from the Legislative Ethics Committee. The vote comes nearly 2 weeks after a subcommittee of the ethics panel said it found probable cause that Wasilla Representative David Eastman violated ethics law by disclosing the existence of a complaint that was considered confidential. The subcommittee recommended that Eastman lose his seat on the Ethics Committee. Eastman said he wanted a formal hearing on the finding, and on the House floor today said it was premature for the House to impose any penalty. The Alaska Journal of Commerce reported Eastman told one of its reporters in late April that an ethics complaint had been filed against another legislator. Eastman has said that as a committee member, he didn't have access to confidential information until August. Representative Zach Fansler refuses to resign from the House, but his constituents are already planning to replace him. The Bethel legislator is accused of assaulting a woman when she denied his sexual advances, and members of his coalition are demanding he step down. Local Democrats met in Bethel yesterday to discuss who should replace Fansler if he resigns his seat or gets expelled from it. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
3 days after Zach Fansler was accused of assault, about 20 of his constituents filed into an empty classroom on the university campus in Bethel and tried to decide what to do. The informal meeting was attended by local professors, nonprofit organizers, and city officials. Local citizen Bev Hoffman helped organize it.
We need to meet immediately, and it is my hope that leaders in the District 38 communities are doing the same thing.
Fansler's scandal is creating a headache for local Democrats. If Fansler goes, Governor Bill Walker could select his replacement from three people recommended by the local party to finish out his term. District 38's Democrats weren't prepared for this. They're between party chairs at the moment, so no one's technically in charge. Without a chair, they can't nominate anyone. Then they'll need to caucus to make their three selections. District 38 includes dozens of Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta villages, and constituents in those communities will need to participate in the caucus remotely. Beyond the logistical challenge, District 38's Democrats may have trouble finding those three replacements for Fansler. It's not that the Waikia Delta lacks leadership, says Kathy Hansen, a former teacher at the university who attended the meeting. It's that those leaders are needed here, and few of them can just drop what they're doing and move to Juneau.
I think there are a number of people that could do the job and would do it very well. Many of them have jobs, so that narrows the group down pretty quickly.
Of course, there's a chance that Governor Walker won't pick anyone that the caucus recommends. When Representative Dean Westlake resigned last month, Walker selected Kotzebue native John Lincoln to replace him, who was not one of the three candidates that his district's Democrats initially recommended. Like many of his constituents, community members at the meeting were still trying to process the allegations against Fansler. Kathy Hansen voted for and with him for years. They both taught at the university.
He and I agree on most of the issues. He's articulate, and I thought he'd serve our district well. And I think he has in many, many, many ways. So this is tough. It's just so unfortunate. So unfortunate that it happened, if it happened. Sounds like it did.
Yesterday, Hansen and District 38's Democrats took the first step towards replacing him. The district caucus will meet on February 6th at 6 p.m. at the Kuskokwim University campus to elect a new district chair. Democrats who live outside of Bethel can call in and participate on a toll-free number. If you live in a village and would like to attend the meeting remotely, contact Diane McAkron at 545-4585. I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
The newest member of the Alaska legislature has been sworn in. State Representative John Lincoln of Kotzebue was sworn in today, 1 week after being appointed by Governor Bill Walker. He was later confirmed by House Democrats. State law requires legislative vacancies be filled by someone from the same party as the predecessor. Election records show Lincoln switched from undeclared to Democrat on January 22nd. Lincoln succeeds former Representative Dean Westlake, who resigned in December after female aides accused him of unwanted touching and inappropriate comments. Westlake has said he is sorry if he made anyone uncomfortable. Lincoln is a vice president for Nana Regional Corporation. He's also a pilot and has worked as an EMT for the Kotzebue Volunteer Fire Department, according to a bio from Walker's office. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how subsistence hunters in Shishmaref are coping with a warming Arctic.
The way we hunt ugruk or seal it hasn't changed. The conditions have.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Who released the bulk of human-caused greenhouse gas emissions into Alaska's air? According to the state's Department of Environmental Conservation, between 1990 and 2015, the industrial sector contributed most of it. That includes the oil and gas industry. DEC Commissioner Larry Hartig said in a press release Tuesday that the findings weren't unexpected. Oil and gas development on the North Slope represents the largest industrial complex in the state. In October, Governor Bill Walker signed an administrative order to jumpstart a strategic climate change plan for Alaska. So even though the agency has released the carbon emissions reports before, this latest one has the potential to shape climate policy. As the climate changes, subsistence hunters in Alaska are changing with it. With warm temperatures this winter, sea ice is forming exceptionally slowly in the Arctic and Bering Strait regions. But as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, hunters in Shishmaref are finding ways to adapt.
There's finally ice covering the Chukchi Sea at the edge of town as Dennis Davis sets up his new drone.
Some people think it's a toy, but a lot of people know that it's an actual tool.
It is a serious drone, worth about $5,000, with a really nice camera mounted under four buzzing propellers. Davis plugs his iPhone into the controller and sends the microwave-sized device speeding out over the sea ice. He looks down at his screen and points out different kinds of ice.
So you can see the different colors in the ice. So what you want is more of the bluer ice like this ice out here.
Blue ice, Davis explains, is more solid than white. Those are areas where people can travel over more safely. Hunters have always watched for these conditions, but the drone can scout further and faster than the naked eye. And that's become more important in recent years, as sea ice conditions have become less predictable. Now, Davis is using his drone to map the best route across the ice.
To more or less, you know, set a course for everybody when they go out hunting in the springtime, I just send out the drone and find the best available trail that they can use instead of having to just go out and mess around on the ice.
It's one way hunters in Shishmaref are adapting to changing conditions. There are others. Davis, for instance, is changing not just how he hunts, but what he hunts. Traditionally, people in Shishmaref relied more heavily on marine mammals for food. In the last few decades, residents say more caribou are venturing closer to town, increasing the local harvest. Salmon returns in the region are booming, and musk oxen, which were wiped out of Alaska in the 1800s, were reintroduced to the mainland 50 years ago and are steadily working their way back into people's diets. In fact, it's one of Davis's favorites. Back home, he's frying up a house special, muskox burgers.
Dang, that's done.
Yeah. Davis likes to cook about as much as he loves to eat, but subsistence isn't just a culinary hobby. For Davis, like most people in Shishmaref, it is a necessity. He and his wife have all seven of their kids living at home. Dinner tonight is self-serve, with everyone grabbing burgers as they come off the stove. By the time it's done, all 8 pounds of meat that Davis mixed together is gone. Buying this much frozen ground beef at the store would have cost up to $70, a per-meal cost that's out of reach for many in rural communities where jobs and cash are scarce. And musk oxen have become a relatively reliable source of meat.
With musk ox, I mean, you know where they're at. You know how they behave. They're not going anywhere. They just stay in the same spot.
That consistency is a relief because environmental conditions are making ocean hunting less and less predictable. In years like this, when the sea ice forms later, it doesn't get as thick, and come springtime, it disappears much faster. That's a problem for hunting ice seals, walrus, and bearded seal, or ugruk.
The way we hunt ugruk or seal hasn't changed. The conditions have.
That's Davis's father-in-law, Percy Nyakpak. He's 65 and says this year's freeze-up is the latest he remembers. As the sea ice retreats, the animals follow, and hunters have to travel further and further to find them. That's not only more expensive, it's dangerous, as weather and sea conditions become more variable. A recent study concluded that marine mammals are still plentiful, but access is getting harder, with worse conditions and shorter windows of time. Nyakpak has seen plenty of shifts in the animals around Shishmaref, some good, some bad. The unpredictable weather worries him, but he's encouraged that younger hunters are constantly adapting.
We've always been hunters here. We hunt regardless of the situation.
For those tracking subsistence issues across Alaska, the sense of uncertainty brings a degree of optimism. Brandon Amasek manages subsistence resources for the Bering Straits Regional Nonprofit.
It's positive in my mind that our people are able to adapt. And they're doing so.
Some hunters are taking advantage of new opportunities. Open water later in the year around St. Lawrence Island has meant more bowhead whale harvests for Savunga in recent years. Amasek says the longer travel to reach hunting grounds requires more money for gas, leading communities to pool resources. And of course, there's Dennis Davis's drone. With healthy food basically unaffordable at local stores, Amasek says hunters have no option but to adapt.
They're still going to make it happen. Because they have to put food on the table, you know, in the villages, they have to do something to offset whatever they can't get from the store. They don't have a choice. They have to go get it.
Amasek's big worry is whether a changing climate could affect animal populations and wellness in the coming years. But as long as the animals are healthy, he's optimistic people in the region will find ways to live off them. In Shishmaref, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The story was made possible by a fellowship from the Marguerite Casey Foundation. A man who allegedly shot one person and fired on another Tuesday in Fairbanks is in custody. Fairbanks police say 19-year-old Benjamin James Kamaroff Akaran was arrested around 1 p.m. after a two-hour manhunt that involved city police and Alaska State Troopers, armored vehicles, and a helicopter. Police say a man who Akaran fired shots at ran from an east side residence and called 911 at about 11 a.m., reporting that Akaran had shot a woman. She was transported to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital with life-threatening wounds. Police directed the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District to lock down an elementary and middle school during the search. The district also placed a second elementary school into sit-tight mode. Akaran was apprehended around 1 p.m. at a Westside residence about 5 miles from the shooting site. He's now being held at Fairbanks Correctional Center, charged with attempted murder. A not guilty plea was entered today during Akaran's arraignment. A judge set bail at $750,000 and said Akaran could be released to pretrial services if he posts bail and agrees to electronic monitoring. City police spokeswoman said today, investigators don't wish to discuss what may have led to the shootings. She said an investigation is ongoing and police are asking members of the public to contact them if they have information on the case. This week, we've been reporting on the allegations against Unalaska Mayor Frank Kelty and how recall elections work. Currently, state law dictates city clerks evaluate recall petitions, but they do not have to prove the charges actually occurred. This means elected officials can be recalled simply because the voters don't like them. But as KUCB's Zoe Sobel reports, one state organization says the process isn't clear enough, and they're asking the legislature to get involved.
Kathy Wasserman is executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. Recently, she says the state has seen an increase in the number of local recall efforts.
Heck, I've been in this job for 15 years. There have been very few. But last year, there were 3 alone. It's kind of risen up to the point where now it's something that, you know, we've realized you need to do something.
Last summer, 3 city councilors in Homer survived a recall election. 2 months later, a trio on the Haines Assembly did the same. In November, a Cordova city councilor lost his seat. Wasserman isn't sure why there have been more recalls, but she says it could be related to increasingly partisan politics. With so many recalls happening, she says it's time the Alaska legislature clarified the recall process, something it was asked to do in 1984.
The Supreme Court said to the legislature, you need to narrow these definitions down so that the municipalities know how to operate this. And the legislature, for whatever reason, has never, ever gone back and done that. So we're just coming back and saying, come on, help us out here.
Under current law, recall petitioners don't have to prove their allegations are true. Neither does the city clerk. The only thing the clerk has to demonstrate is that if an allegation were true, it would be sufficient grounds for recall. Wasserman says that's a thorny task to put before local officials, especially with such high stakes.
You're asking the city clerk to be the judge and jury before things have even started on whether a person should be recalled based on very vague definitions, and that's all we want changed.
She says the Alaska Municipal League passed a resolution asking the legislature to review the standards for municipal recalls and clarify definitions. For example, Wasserman says recalls usually center on allegations of misconduct in office, but state law doesn't actually define misconduct.
What it has boiled down to is a city clerk, who is usually not a legal person, having to make a call on whether misconduct in office has really occurred or not.
Wasserman says the goal isn't to make filing recall petitions more difficult for the public. It's to make it easier for city clerks to rule on them correctly. Unalaska City Clerk Margie Veter had no comment on AML's effort to clarify recalls, although she says she accepted help from the city attorney to navigate the process. As the subject of a recall effort, Mayor Frank Kelty agrees the process needs clarification. He even voted for the AML resolution.
They need to take a look at it because, people's reputations are being ruined. My reputation has been tarnished, and I don't think that's right as much for the 40 years of service I've given to the community, especially when I haven't done anything that warrants it.
In addition to being mayor, Kelty sits on the school board, chairs the local Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and serves on multiple statewide organizations. He also had prior stints on the Unalaska City Council and as mayor. Kelty says the accusations have hurt him so much, his family has advised him to quit investing his time in the community. But he's not ready to give up just yet.
I'm so proud to take people around and show them our schools and the industry that I was a part of for 35 years and how it's grown and how Unalaska is, world-renowned, not just for the deadliest catch, but for our schools and the quality of life in our community. So it's hard to tear it away and just say, I'm walking away from all of this. I probably couldn't do it.
Kelty hopes Unalaskans won't give up on him either. As the recall election nears, Kelty says his door is open, and he's willing to talk with undecided voters, even if they stop him in the grocery store. The recall election is scheduled for March 6th. In Unalaska, I'm Zoe Sobel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
If you live in rural Alaska, being a winner on the television game show The Price is Right has a price tag they don't tell you about on the show. A Bethel resident recently learned that when she won big on the program.
The lucky one is Joni Beckham. Come on down!
Wearing a blue-flowered cussbuck, Beckham earned $63,000 worth of prizes as a double showcase winner. The episode aired on Monday but was filmed in early November. Beckham is a nurse at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. As she spun the famed wheel, she and host Drew Carey gave a shout-out to Bethel.
I want to say hi to my babies, Kennedy, Kayla, and Kyler, and my husband, of course. all my coworkers at my local hospital in Bethel. Hi, guys!
Hi, everybody.
Beckham's prizes included a trip for two to Thailand, as well as two cars, a basketball arcade game, a washer and dryer, and more. But to get all her prizes to Bethel, Beckham says she will have to pay the shipping from the lower 48, except on the cars. The show will deliver those as far as Anchorage. Native language experts are urging the state to declare a linguistic emergency and work with tribes to open a discussion about the endangerment of Indigenous languages. KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports.
In a report to both the legislature and Governor Walker, the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council warned that most of the 20 Indigenous languages recognized by the state are expected to go extinct by the end of the century. They recommended that, in the council's words, the governor issue an administrative order recognizing the linguistic emergency exists and clearly stating that it is the policy of the state of Alaska actively to work to promote the survival and efflorescence of all of Alaska's 21 official languages. Of all the endangered languages, Central Yupik has maintained the most speakers, with a little over 10,000 people using it today. The report also implores policymakers to look at the relationship between historical trauma and language loss and consider something, quote, modeled after Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission to help find healing options for survivors of that trauma. The council suggests that the state sponsor a series of listening and discussion sessions so that actions of the past can be publicly recognized, quote, partnering with communities and Indigenous organizations to hold healing ceremonies. I'm Christine Trudeau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Teresa Katsourilis, Anna Rose MacArthur, and Christine Trudeau in Bethel, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.